The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Israel announced a new wave of broad-scale strikes on Tehran, and US President Donald Trump said Iran's unconditional surrender is the only thing that will satisfy him to end the escalating war. Now, Trump's remarks on social media were a setback to hopes of a quick end to the conflict because they came after the Iranian president Masoud Pezeshkian said some countries had begun mediation efforts to end the war, although he did not provide details. Joining me now to talk about this further is Lindsay Hilsum, Channel 4 News International Editor, and we'll be joined by Donacha Bachoen, Professor of Politics at Dublin City University. Lindsay, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, you're in Beirut, and we were hearing of massive bombing attacks on southern Beirut yesterday. What is the situation like there now?
Well, there have been bombing attacks across southern Beirut for the last few nights. And what they appear to be targeting, this is the Israelis, is buildings which are connected with Hezbollah. Hezbollah being being an armed faction here, an armed group, which is really an Iranian proxy. But also what happened overnight was that there was an airborne incursion of Israelis in the east of the Bekaa Valley. And this is very unusual. And there was actual fighting between the Israelis who came in and armed men on the ground, presumably Hezbollah. There may have been some others as well. And in the end, those Israelis were extracted. But what the Lebanese government is saying is that at least 16 people have been left dead. And we're talking about 200 people who've been killed in Lebanon over the last week, and maybe up to 30,000 displaced.
Now, the point will be made by the Israelis and the Americans that in this case, Hezbollah fired first as a reaction to the targeting of Iran. So they wanted to, I suppose, fire something in solidarity, and that brought yet again the wrath of the Israelis down upon them.
Well, certainly Hezbollah, after the supreme leader in Iran was assassinated by the Israelis or the Americans, it's not quite clear, did fire into Israel. And yes, that was the trigger that the Israelis needed in order to come back in and fire much more effectively than Hezbollah can. And the Lebanese government has been very angry with Hezbollah. In fact, the justice minister is now trying to take out a case against the Hezbollah leader because they feel that Hezbollah is dragging them, dragging this country into a war, which it just can't cope with, because there was a war here at the towards the end of 2024. We've already got so many displaced people here. Now the Israelis are saying that everybody has to evacuate the south of the country. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of people. And then they said that people had to evacuate the southern suburbs of Beirut. Now, this is an area which is inhabited by Shia people, as well as Hezbollah. There are armed men there, but there are an awful lot of ordinary civilians as well. And they came out in their tens of thousands. They're now sleeping on the Corniche. They're sleeping in the main Martyrs Square here. I was talking to some of them yesterday. They're kind of fatalistic about it. They say, well, what can we do? I talked to a young woman, a graphic designer. She's sleeping in the car. She, you know, with three other family members. How is she supposed to complete her studies? It's impossible. And that's what's happening to people all over Lebanon.
Now, we saw in Gaza when the Israelis herded the Palestinians into particular areas, it was in some cases all the better to target what they imagined were Hamas leaders. I mean, is there a danger that ordinary citizens will, of course, go to places that they deem to be safe? But the logical thing is that also Hamas people will go there knowing or believing that the Israelis won't target those areas, but perhaps the Israelis will.
Well, indeed, nobody really knows. I have to say that the people I have seen in the center of Beirut do not look like Hezbollah operatives. They look like perfectly ordinary families. We're talking about a lot of children. We're talking about a lot of women. In the southern suburbs, you do see young men who are associated with Hezbollah. They're on motorbikes. Many of them are armed. One of the things they're doing is trying to stop journalists from filming because we try and go and film what's been hit, and they don't like us doing that. But I think that the other issue is that they haven't as yet, the Israelis haven't as yet flattened the southern suburbs, which is what they've threatened to do. So people here are also asking themselves, well, is this real or is this psychological warfare? What are the Israelis trying to do? Are they just playing with us? And Lebanon is being dragged into this war, a war which most Lebanese feel has absolutely nothing to do with them.
Now, there was an attack on UNIFIL positions by the Israelis, which has left a number of Ghanaian peacekeepers critically ill. I mean, the Israelis operate with impunity. They have shown no love for the UNIFIL forces in the past. So I presume any international or UN condemnation will mean nothing to the Israelis for this action.
No, and of course the Irish have been part of the UNIFIL contingent down there, supposedly trying to keep the peace in the south. And yes, it was there was an attack, and the UNIFIL headquarters there was up in flames, and two of the Ghanaians, as I understand it, injured. Also, the Lebanese government forces have left that border area, so they are unable to protect this country from Israel, and they are unable, it seems, to disarm or cope with Hezbollah. There are a lot of condemnations all over the place from the UN and also from European governments. But no, this is a war which was started by the US and Israel. Their motives or their goals, or at least the US goals, are not very clear. But the Israelis are very clear that they are trying to destroy Hezbollah here in Lebanon for once and for all. And in a sense, they're taking advantage of the situation which the Americans have created with this assault on Iran.
There seems to be a peculiar mindset in the Israeli government, the Netanyahu government, whatever about ordinary Israelis, that in some way these attacks on both Gaza and their actions on the West Bank against Palestinians and the actions against Hezbollah in Lebanon, that this will in some way win hearts and minds in ordinary people, when most of us would consider the very opposite is going to take place, that you maybe kill off this generation of Hamas, this generation of Hezbollah, but there will be another generation to follow. Israel's troubles will not be over.
Sure, but what the way the Israelis would look at it, particularly after the attacks by Hamas September 7th, then they see this as a way of keeping Israelis safe or safer. That is how they would see it. And there is a complexity here in Lebanon, which is many Lebanese who are not allied with Hezbollah feel very strongly that Hezbollah are endangering their country, that there is no need to provoke Israel in this way, and that what Lebanon needs is to have a purely secular government, and a government where you don't have one party, which is Hezbollah, which is armed and which can attack another country, which is Israel. That the Lebanese forces are the ones who should be protecting the country. And in fact, the Lebanese government put out an edict a couple of days ago saying that, you know, all people with unlicensed weapons had to hand them in. They are trying to, as it were, crack down on Hezbollah. But the problem is that the Lebanese government is very weak. It has many different factions within it, and it is unable to control Hezbollah. But certainly Lebanese I speak to, they are upset with Israel, they're angry with Israel, they blame Israel, but they also blame Hezbollah, because they say Hezbollah is weaker, and they know that if they fire into Israel, they will bring all of this Israeli fury and firepower onto ordinary Lebanese.
In terms of the widening of the war, Lindsay, I mean, Trump has said nothing but unconditional surrender will do him to bring an end to the bombardment of Tehran. I'm not sure how much firepower Tehran, the Iranians, have left. I mean, is it the case that the Israelis and the Americans are going to take out every single military emplacement that the Iranians have and literally leave them helpless? And that will amount to an unconditional surrender.
Look, wars very rarely end with unconditional surrender, do they? They normally end in the modern age with some kind of deal, which is what President Trump in some of his iterations seems to think is his strong point. We don't know how much more the Iranians have in terms of firepower. Masoud Pezeshkian, as you were just saying before I came on, he's the Iranian president, has said that they will stop firing at the neighboring countries like Gulf countries and so on, Bahrain, Kuwait, Dubai and so on, unless those countries fire at Iran. Now, but as yet, they don't seem to have done that. And there was firing at the airport in Dubai today. The Iranians clearly have far less in terms of weaponry than the Americans and the Israelis, but they have an ability to sow chaos in the region. And that is one of the things that they have done by firing at the Gulf countries and also, you know, firing into the airport at Azerbaijan. I suspect that was a mistake. I mean, there's no reason for the Iranians to try and bring Azerbaijan into this. But they do have proxies, not just Hezbollah here in Lebanon. There are the Houthis in Yemen. There are Shia militia in Iraq. And so they do, although those proxies are much weaker than they were a couple of years ago, they still exist. They have the ability to carry out terror attacks in different places in the world. It's hard to see that the Iranians are going to agree to an unconditional surrender unless the whole regime is toppled. And that's very difficult. It's very difficult to do from the air. And I think that one of the many issues about this war is that President Trump's goals keep changing and the method that he is using seems inadequate for some of those changing goals.
Lindsay, thank you very much for joining us from Beirut. That's Lindsay Hilsum, Channel 4 News International editor. Donna Kobacho, and Professor of Politics at the School of Law and Government at DCU, is also on the line listening to that. Donna, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
How is all of this going to end? Because there was a wrinkle in everything last night when it was suggested, whether this is fact or speculation, that the Russians were helping the Iranians target U.S. military assets in the Gulf region. And, you know, this is a man who's enthralled to Putin, and it looks like Putin is turning on Trump. Or is he?
Well, it's obviously somewhat of a humiliation for Russia when one of its allies comes under pressure and Russia is not able to afford effective assistance. They've already been down that road, of course, with Syria. Bashar al-Assad is now residing in Moscow. So now they see Iran, which has played a major role, of course, in Russia's war in Ukraine. It's been the major supplier of these Shahed drones to Russia. And in fact, that's why the US has been looking for Ukrainian assistance in the last couple of days with combating those drones. US officials are now saying that Russia is providing Iran with intelligence on the locations of American warships, aircraft throughout the Middle East. And that's obviously going to help target US forces. When that was put to Pete Hegseth, he said he wasn't concerned. He kind of gave the impression that we know all this anyway. The people who should be afraid are not Americans, but the Iranians were not going to live. So he was kind of putting on this bravado front. But there is an interesting Russian-Ukrainian dynamic to it, as I said, not least the fact that the Ukrainians have been asked by the Americans to help them, as I said, ward off these drones.
Now, the question of where this will impact the Ukrainian conflict. I mean, if Trump was to turn on Putin, and again, we don't know about kompromat, we don't know about what Putin might have in terms of the Epstein files. So we don't know whether it's possible for Trump to react to this move by the Russians. But if he did and turned his back on Putin, would that help save Zelensky's cause?
Oh, it certainly would. I mean, if there is going to be an end to Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, it's going to come because of pressure applied on Russia as the invading party. I mean, Ukraine has signed up to a ceasefire for the last year now at Trump's request. It's Russia that's proven unwilling. So no, that would be a game changer if America was able to apply the full force of the pressure that it can apply. However, it's been, as you know, very reluctant to support Ukraine in any way. In fact, they've used more Patriot missiles in the last couple of days in the Middle East than Ukraine has used in the last couple of years. So this is obviously taking away from support that Ukraine could be getting. It's obviously distracting as well from Ukraine's defense. That's of course from their perspective, but from Russia's point of view, this is also a good news story in the short term because the price of oil has spiked. It's gone up by a quarter to $90. Russia, of course, depends on fossil fuels, and Trump has given India a 30-day waiver to start buying Russian oil again. You might remember that 6 months ago he put heavy sanctions on anyone who was going to buy Russian fossil fuels. India was the main target of that. Now India is being given permission to buy. So in the short term, actually, despite the fact that it is a humiliation, as I said, when one of Russia's allies is attacked, it's also good for the Russian economy.
Now, one of the things that the Trump administration has offered last night is reinsurance for shipping going through the Straits of Hormuz. In other words, no Lloyd's of London is going to offer insurance to a ship that's going to brave the Houthis or the Iranians in traveling through those dangerous waters. So the administration is going to put up several billion dollars to offer reinsurance and therefore reassurance. But which captain of any tanker is going to say, oh, I'll take Trump's money and take my chances?
Well, exactly. I don't think that that will be changing the perceptions of people right now about moving through that Strait of Hormuz, which cuts off, you know, perhaps 20% of global oil supplies. And of course, Iran has also been attacking energy infrastructure in the region, including Saudi Arabia's largest refinery. So the economics of this are huge. And of course, that's what's usually brought America into the region in the first place. I mean, there's an Italian journalist who put it well sarcastically some years ago when he says Americans are very lucky because wherever they go to bring freedom, they find oil. Oil is always, of course, at the heart of it in some respect. But as Lindsay pointed out, this is also Israel's war. And whereas US objectives are unclear, it seems in this case that they're following the Israeli playbook when it comes to Iran.
And is the Israeli tail wagging the American dog?
It certainly seems so. I mean, Netanyahu made 7 trips to the White House during the last year. He has been claiming for decades that Iran was imminently on the verge of getting nuclear weapons. They were supposed to have been destroyed now during that 12-day war last year. So why they are back again so soon when their capabilities have been destroyed is, again, from a US perspective, unclear. But it's a big win for Netanyahu, who spent most of his career lecturing US presidents on the need to confront Iran. And it seems if you take Marco Rubio at his word, where he said that more or less they were expecting an Israeli attack on Iran, so the Iranians were going to attack then in retaliation Americans, so therefore they got in there first. It was proactively acting in a defensive way, even though that seems counterintuitive. The thing is that Israelis support this war. They are 81% of Israelis are in support of the strikes, but still only 38% have expressed trust in Netanyahu. So it hasn't paid any dividends necessarily for him personally. And Trump, by the way, has stepped into domestic politics in Israel, demanding that the president of Israel, President Herzog, pardon Netanyahu for any crimes he may have committed so he can focus on this war.
Now, that stat that you mentioned about 80% of Israelis favoring the war, it's the inverse in the United States. Only about 20-25% support the war, which it was pointed out on CNN last night is not usual when America embarks on a war. Generally, at the beginning at least, be it Vietnam or wherever, it's popular, and then it diminishes as the bodies start rolling home. But at the beginning of this war, it doesn't appear that many people want it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when America went to war in Afghanistan in 2001, 90% of the American people were in favor. Now, as you say, it's a small minority. And that's largely because of the chasm between what Trump promised and what he's delivering. He was supposed to be the president who was going to bring an end to all these entanglements and wars in foreign countries. And now that's being kind of redefined by his supporters saying, no, he didn't say no new wars. He said no forever wars. We'll only be involved in kind of quick wars. And in any case, Iran was already at war with America for many years. But, you know, this is it's important to point out again that it lacks domestic credibility and legitimacy in America because only Congress has the right to declare war. America's declared war 5 times only in its history, but usually there was some degree of kind of congressional support at some stage, even retroactively. But Trump hasn't tried to reach out even to his European allies for support. He hasn't even informed them, of course, that he was going to go down this road.
Donnacha, thank you very much for joining us on the line. That's Donnacha O'Bacoin from DCU.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.